pick up on the security issue?
Yeah, just quickly, the security, yes, security is and parking is going to become quite important. We have in Taunton, we funded two sort of more secure parking for cycling that's going to come forward in the next few months. Hopefully that is going to be a lot more secure. We are looking, Mendip have commissioned, and we've got some very good looking on-street cycle, secure cycle infrastructure going in, again, across a lot of Mendip areas. We have picked up, and I'll take this on board, we picked up as part of the policy team now, the parking strategy going forward, which is looking at how parking will work across Somerset. And it's a big topic, as you can well imagine, with a lot of people with very strong opinions. And I will take it on board to sort of bring into that sort of how we look at town centre cycle parking as well, because it is parking after all. So I will pick that up. And e-scooters, I totally understand where you're coming from. And believe me, I do know the positives and negatives of all of those, which is why we have to wait for the DfT's study and response to come back before we can go further forward.
Thank you, Matthew.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'm going to draw this to a close now. Yes, we've had quite a wide-ranging debate over the active travel and covered a huge amount of ground. There's clearly an awful lot of work going on. I think the one thing that irks me the most is this sort of beauty parade that local authorities have to do to try and get funds fighting amongst each other. It would be much better if there was a dedicated stream which we could plan much more sensibly with that anyway. A lot of points about the rural areas and how they need to be included well within this, and I think there certainly is a clear desire to make sure that rural areas are as well served in their way as the urban areas are, which I think is good. There was reference to integration into the local plans. I don't intend to delve into that now, but I think a future committee would be very interested to know about the local plan development and how this work is going to feed into that and become policy. And we've heard about the quiet lanes and 20 mile an hour zones. They do come with their issues, of course, in relation to potentially increasing traffic flow, which is something that communities need to be aware of before they go for them. But overall, thank you both very much for a very interesting presentation. Thank you to committee members near and far for your questions, which I think have been really aided to the debate. And we'll now move on to the next item, which is the asset disposal report from Oliver Woodhams, who's been sitting very patiently in the corner. Thank you, Oliver, and thank you for your patience. This was born out of a perception I had in relation to the budget. There was a suggestion that perhaps asset sales might be formally included in supporting the budget. Now, I've been put right on that one, but nonetheless, there is still a major area of work that is bringing together all the assets of five councils into a coherent whole and then making sense of them. And of course, we've got assets in relation to buildings and property that we use for work to help the council run itself. There's a significantly large investment portfolio that's coming forward, mainly from the districts, I think. And so we need to look at how we're going to derive income from our property portfolio, but also capital disposals where appropriate, and then take account of the running costs associated with holding a property estate. So Oliver has very kindly offered to give us a verbal update as to where he is with his work at the moment and the likely timelines associated. So Oliver.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, committee, for the invite to come and just update you. This will be quite a brief, a very high level overview. There's an awful lot of work going on. I'm the head of property at the moment for the County Council, but also have been for a year and a half a co-work stream lead on the LGR asset optimization work stream. So we've got a huge amount of work underway, which will continue through into the new council. And that this really just skims the surface of that. So if you go over to the next slide, what I prepared just to talk to you about, and I will touch on your point, Chair, about asset records and tech forge as well, But really looking at the, I think the query that came from committee at the last meeting was rooted in sort of, you know, what are the requirements for financial plans? So I'll touch on those. And I'd like to have Christian here who might be able to support questions that are more of a finance than a property.
Oliver, could you just move the mic slightly closer, please?
Yep. Is that okay? And then talk about the asset disposal process at the County Council that came out of our pre-meet discussion, but noting really that is going to change. So in many ways, that's already going out of date. And then talk about our sub-work stream for property rationalisation and where we've got to on that. So if you just go through the next slide. So the slide here really is our update on the position for the combined new council. So this is amalgamating all of the financial plans for the districts and the county council in the table that you see, and I'll explain that. And capital receipts, if you look through the budget report that was agreed at full council a couple of weeks ago, there is a requirement for capital receipts for the new council. Capital receipts are going to be required to finance transformation, and there's the flexible use of capital receipts, and the total of that is near enough 16 million. And they are also required as part of the financing assumptions that are being made on the capital programme going forward. And I think the committee was really just interested in, well, where are those capital receipts going to come from and what are the risks? So hopefully this table sort of explains that. I'll just go through the columns from left to right. And again, all the time, just try to remember that this is the combined picture of all five organisations. So in the current financial year, 2022-23, the opening balance across all organisations held in reserves, so there's a capital receipts reserve held on the balance sheet, was 18.7 million. And the orange sort of salmon colour there is what comes out of that 18.7 million. And the green column is what's going into it in the course of the year, leaving you with a closing balance. And in the current financial year, you know, there's going to be quite a big reduction in our combined levels of capital reserves. There's an assumption in the financial plans that about 12 million will be used for the flexible use of capital receipts. That is largely to finance LGR transformation. It remains to be seen as we head towards an outturn position whether or not all of that will be required in the current financial year. And then there are also plans for each of the authorities to use capital receipts for financing aspects of capital programmes, and that totals another 12.6 million. So quite a large sum, nearly 25 million across those two headings. We are expecting and indeed have banked now about £10 million worth of capital receipts, just over. There might be a bit more than that to come in during the year, but we've taken a fairly prudent view. So we will end with the closing balance of around about 5 million. That will depend, that's still an estimate at this stage, that will depend on the decisions that are taken by different sovereign councils on how they finance their capital and revenue expenditure as part of their outturn deliberations. So there may be some changes there. And all of the Section 151 officers, as you might expect, are collaborating and working on that together and keeping in touch. As we look forward to the next financial year, 2023-24, the first year of the new council, let's assume we do start with an opening balance of 4.9 million. It's likely to be slightly different. There are assumptions in that we will use 4 million of that for further financing of transformational revenue expenditure and another 6.4 to finance the capital programme. You'll note that combined number, 10.4 million, is bigger than the 4.9 we started with. So we have to sell some properties next year to be able to meet those financial commitments. The blue table at the end, the blue column at the end, shows, you know, what's the minimum number of receipts we need to get in each financial year to sort of meet those those targets, and we're looking at 5.5 million for next year. We have a very healthy pipeline of assets that have been, you know, either on the market for some time or are exchanged awaiting completion or are surplus and already empty and ready to be sold. We're just waiting for planning permission to be granted or something like that. So none of that will require, in fact, we're expecting about 11 million, so about around twice the amount that we're depending on. And we've got some pretty low risk stuff in there. There's a couple of flats developments, so one at the Coal Orchard for Somerset West and Taunton, and there's another one in South Somerset where they're selling off flats that have been acquired through regeneration schemes or commercial investments, and you know, we're halfway through selling them off. We would expect to have sold all of those during the course of the next financial year. There are also a number of sales that are nearing conclusion or you know, we're actively marketing properties within the County Council's portfolio. And you know, any organisation, particularly one that's the size of the new council, which will be a very big authority with a lot of assets, will have a regular turnover of its asset base. I think that the key point here is, you know, we're not starting from a position of having to find properties to sell. We're starting from a position where we've got quite a significant consolidated pipeline of properties that are already ready to be sold. We're not taking a fire sale approach, so each of those decisions is taken with a view of, is now the right time to sell? Should we be developing a strategy that can increase the value of this property? And it can take years to do that. So some of our properties sit on this sales and disposals pipeline for a long time. They're generally rented out. You know, hopefully they're not vacant while we're doing that. But, you know, there is a large pipeline. And then we've taken the picture forward into 2024, 2025, 2026. It's worth noting that, you know, that green column gets a bit difficult to estimate. It's a bit of a guess, really, as you go forward. So 7.4 million is based on the sort of profile of sales we're looking at from our existing pipeline. But of course, new opportunities will come up that aren't on our existing list. And then 5 million is our sort of wet finger. That's typically what we might expect to sell in each year. It's never been lower than that at the County Council. That's a very prudent assumption, but it's sort of what we use for financial planning purposes generally. Okay, next slide, please. So the County Council has had a asset disposal policy in place since 2014, and so it's well out of date. And it still applies. It'll apply till the 31st of March. And in fact, by default, it will continue to apply until it's replaced in the new council under the continuing authority model. But for what it's worth, this is the process that's followed at the County Council, and it's governed by that policy. First of all, you know, an opportunity arises to dispose either through an upcoming break in a lease or a service no longer requiring a property or some other circumstance. And there's a discussion internally within the property team at the County Council to sort of identify whether that's something we want to reuse. We consult with a lot of services about that. We're getting much better at joining up, you know, a service might give up a property over here that can be reused by another service for a different purpose. And generally speaking, it is easier to reuse property rather than acquire a new site. So we always look at that first. And then the asset strategy group at the County Council will discuss the output of that officer discussion and sort of endorse a recommended approach or disagree with the recommended approach very occasionally. That then gets taken forward from asset strategy group to the council's formal decision making process, which and this can be quite, you know, it takes a number of months sometimes to sort of get to this point as options are developed and properties are marketed. But prior to disposal, a decision is taken, and that's in accordance with our scheme of delegation, that will always include consultation with local members and the executive members involved. We don't generally consult with all members, but all members have an opportunity to input to that process through the kind of representations part. And then we'll, you know, all being well, we will execute a sale. Quite a lot falls through from time to time. It's a dynamic market. I think it's really important to note, though, that we've just 2 weeks ago signed off an asset management strategy and plan for the new council. That provides a high-level framework for a range of policies that will govern the work of the strategic asset management function in the new council. And at an early stage, we want to bring forward and develop a new policy for disposals that may change this process. And so this, you know, this will become out of date quite quickly, we hope. Before I go on, I'll just touch on the point about another piece of work we've been doing in the LGR workstream is developing a new asset management system for the new council. So that's really fundamental to anything that's done in property, is understanding the estate that you hold and making sure your property records are accurate. We have a sort of project within the work stream that's been running for about 18 months, or even going back in the county council for longer than that, to acquire and develop a new asset management software system. We've purchased TechForge, which is a leading market solution, after a competitive procurement exercise. We now have all the buildings set up on that new asset management database, and all of the county council's land and much of the district council's land is in the process of going on to that. But there's a lot of little strips of land left over from housing developments and stuff that will take many months more to transfer from GIS systems onto this database. So we focused on the buildings first. So we're pretty confident that our asset records are in a pretty good place as we transition to a new authority. Although it will take another year to get that system to where we'd want it to be, really, in terms of populating it with data and being able to turn off all of the legacy systems around the council. Okay, I'll move on to the next slide and just finish off talking a little bit about property rationalisation. Another sub-work stream within the property LGR work, we've been looking at one of the main opportunities identified for property in the business case is that, you know, the new council will inherit a large asset base from lots of different organisations, and there'll be opportunities to look at that and perhaps, you know, move services around and free up assets and sell off assets that aren't needed. And we think that there are opportunities in a number of areas here. Office space is probably the biggest opportunity. It's certainly not by any means the biggest element of our portfolio, but it's as an opportunity for rationalisation. There's a big opportunity there, and I'll come on to that. But also, we've got a lot of different face-to-face customer delivery points that we will look at. Depots we will need to look at some point. We haven't really started that yet, but there's a large depot network for the new council, and some of those are quite close together. You've got sort of district depots and county depots operating very close by. There might be opportunities there, and lots of other operational sites as well. And then we've got this huge sort of cloud in the background of legacy property that's held. It's not really used for our operations. It doesn't necessarily have a strategic value for the new council. And we need to look at, you know, why are we holding on to that stuff as we go forward? But that all told, that is a huge amount of work. And we're really sort of focusing on the areas where we think we can realise the most benefit quickly, rather than trying to tackle it all at once. It's going to take a number of years. And in fact, this stuff never really stops. I think if you work in property, you're always reviewing your portfolio, you're always turning it over. You're always looking to optimise the estate that you've got. Focusing on offices, if you just move on to the next slide. This was always going to be a big opportunity, but I think post-COVID working sort of amplifies the opportunity quite a lot. And the new council will adopt a kind of hybrid working, it's called dynamic working strategy. You walk around any of our main office buildings in any of the five councils, and you'll see that there's quite a lot of empty space, quite a lot of empty desks. We've also got, we will over 2 to 3 years see functions move around and teams move around potentially, although, you know, we're a long way from deciding how that's going to work or where it's going to happen. So there's a real potential to reduce our office footprint, and that has a financial benefit. We might be able to lease some surplus space out. We might be able to sell off an asset for a capital receipt, and we can reduce, through either of those ways, we can reduce our running costs. But it's also around, this strategy will also support us to become an employer of choice. I think there's an expectation now in particularly amongst younger candidates that, you know, employees offer dynamic hybrid working, and it will support our climate emergency as well, by reducing the amount of commuting and business travel. So final slide, just to sort of touch on what we're actively doing. There's been a lot of desktop analysis and sort of strategy development and thinking done on the office estate. And that will continue through the One Public Estate programme. So we've got approval from the One Public Estate central government team to spend £80,000 of their money doing a study for the new council that also takes in the NHS estate in Somerset, because they're going through lots of change as well. And we will work with the police very, very closely in that, and other public partners if they're interested, through the One Public Estate process. But here in Somerset at the moment, we've identified these four opportunities, and one of them has in part already been delivered. Where, you know, it was obvious from the data we were looking at that we had surplus space and we need to sort of do something about it relatively soon, because there's a financial imperative not to heat empty spaces and pay business rates and things on space that we're not using. So we have relocated already a small group of staff out of Broughton House, which is on the Blackbrook Estate in Taunton. We're looking to lease that property out at the moment. We think that's the right strategy for that site. And we're hopeful that we'll be able to find someone who's willing to take that. It's a good building, and that will deliver a revenue saving, hopefully in the not too distant future. We're also looking at Petter's House in Yeovil, which is very, very close to Yeovil Library. There's a very small number of people working in Petter's House at South Somerset District Council at the moment. They have been spoken to and are being consulted through the unions about relocating to either the library for the customer facing services, which is just over the road, or to Brimpton Way, which is the main office base in Yeovil, if they're not sort of customer service, customer delivery staff. That's underway. No decision has been made yet. We need to make sure that we can fit everyone in and we can provide the right sort of customer access solution for Yeovil, but that's underway. That's likely to be a capital receipt, a sale rather than a lease, but again, no decision's been made yet. We will consider both options when we get there. We're doing a much more complicated review of 9 sites in West Somerset, mainly when we talk about West Somerset here, we're really talking about Minehead and Willerton rather than the sort of Exmoor and the rural areas. There's 9 operational properties that the new council will inherit in that site, and we kicked off a review just after Christmas, talking to staff. Again, unions are being consulted on this, and community representatives and local members, and analysing, you know, what needs is the new council going to have in that area for different services. How's customer service delivery going to work? What are the condition of these sites? How much is it going to cost to decarbonise them? How are we supporting customer access in a community that's quite hard to get to and quite hard to get out of for many people? So we'll look at that, and decisions, we hope to get to a point where we finish that analysis and we can start taking some decisions in about May. And then finally, the other building that we're looking at is C Block in County Hall. We think from the analysis we've done that there's not going to be a need, whatever the outcome of wider thinking on our office accommodation requirements in Taunton, there's no scenario where we're likely to need C Block at the moment. So we're just starting to work out what we might do with that site. It is functionally end of its life, C Block and County Hall. It would cost a lot of money to sort of bring back into use, and so we'd like to dispose of it, but that's not going to be easy. It's not an easy site to dispose of, and there's not many people wanting to buy big office blocks at the moment. So that will be a big challenge, but we're at least starting that work now. Okay, that's all I had. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Excellent, very comprehensive discussion of this description of a very complicated and complex area. So thank you very much for that. I suppose in a way, Quantock House was the same as Block C, so that managed to get itself redeveloped, but perhaps the market is shrinking for that. Anyway, I've got Andy Dingwall who'd like to speak.
Very quickly, if that's okay, because I've got to leg it straight afterwards. The disposal of housing stock you mentioned, what is the level of risk that you've predicted, given market conditions, you know, estimates of house prices, you know, falling by up to 20 or so percent? Is that a significant risk for this strategy, or is it baked into the kind of initial thinking?
Yeah, so the only sort of residential stock of any significance are the two developments, one in South Somerset and one at the Coal Orchard just up the road here. They are quite bespoke, and, you know, in terms of the disposal value, they're reasonably significant. So we're expecting, you know, 5 to 10 million across those two sites. But in the context of our whole portfolio, we're absolutely not talking about the residential housing stock that's operated through the HRA. That's completely different. I think we're expecting, so we're partway through. Well, it's largely being led by the two district councils involved at the moment. They are partway through disposing. They've concluded a lot of exchanges on those properties. I think the South Somerset one only has 3 units left to be sold, so we're anticipating 750,000 or so for that. But, you know, we're not heavily exposed financially. The Coal Orchard, I think they're about halfway through in terms of the sales that they've exchanged. And yes, we might take, you know, there will be a reflection of house prices, but again, they're well underway in terms of the going through the that process of marketing and disposing of sites.
Thank you. Any other? You mentioned that the new council will have to have a new asset disposal strategy. Do you know if that's been worked on yet, or when it's likely to be in place?
Yeah, I think we'd like to do it as soon as we can. I think it's just a case of trying to find the officer capacity to sort of fit that work in. We've had one or two early discussions with the lead member for assets and the lead member for finance and their assistants. So, we have a lot to do over the next month or two. I suspect we'll be picking it up at some point in April, May. And certainly it's top of our list of policies from a property perspective that we want to get in place.
Okay, Oliver, thank you very much, as I say, for a very comprehensive run through where we are at the moment. And I don't think we underestimate the amount of work that's been done and will have to be still done. So thank you very much for that. Can we put it on our forward plan list for passing on to the next appropriate committee? Because I think this is something, one of the points I think we made in our early discussions was that your team was working at full capacity, if not beyond that. And I think this is so important that we do need to make sure, or the council needs to make sure, that you do have the people available to help you do the work, because otherwise it's got to be done, it's got to be resourced.
Thank you. We're very happy to come and attend the appropriate committee in the new council.
Right, moving swiftly on, we'll go to Dillington House update. Ian Rousell is with us online, I believe. Ian, sorry, you dropped out earlier on this morning, I think. So
I did, yeah. Thank you
for waiting.
No problem. Okay, yeah, thank you everybody for inviting me to give you an update on how we're exiting at the moment and our plans for exiting Dillington House. Can I have the next slide, please? So just a quick recap, really, this first slide, about to remind everybody of the decision that was taken back in September 2022. Which was to, it took into consideration the financial position at Dillington House, and particularly the full repairing lease that we had in place there, that was presenting lots of liabilities for Somerset County Council, in addition to those continuing financial losses that were being incurred kind of every year, and the challenges as well that, that COVID had kind of placed on the operations. The decision was then taken to cease those activities, those hospitality activities, from the 30th of September 2023. And then there being 2 months to vacate the site before handing the site back to the landlord on the at the end of November. Just wanted to highlight that the SCIL, which stands for Somerset Centre for Integrated Learning, their training activities dealt with slightly different from the hospitality activity. So they will be continuing post September 23. So they do need to continue to operate from a venue, which I'll come on to in a bit. Thank you. One of the areas to update you on is staffing. So since that decision was made, we've been busy undertaking consultation with staff and with trade unions as well around the impacts of that closure of the service and the risk of redundancies that kind of represents. We've also, as part of that consultation, we've now finalised and agreed a discretionary retention scheme that hopefully will incentivize members of staff to stay with us until the end of September, just to ensure that we can continue to deliver bookings and services up until that date. Just to make you aware that the general manager has since left, and he left at the end of December. So we've now replaced that post internally with a promotion, and that's going really well. For any vacant posts, so new members of staff are all being employed on fixed term contracts to the end of September 23, and that actually surprisingly isn't going too badly actually in terms of finding people willing to take on those fixed term contracts for fairly short periods of time at the moment. And we're also been extending our numbers of casual staff that are used quite extensively throughout the house and the operations, just to provide that additional cover as well. Thank you. In terms of some of the property and sort of site-specific issues, Bev and Britton have been instructed to support us around that the lease and issuing notice on the lease has now been done. That was kind of the recognising as well some of the risks around that full repairing liabilities lease that I mentioned earlier on. We're now working on a settled commercial solution with the landlord. So negotiations are taking place between property colleagues who have significant experience in these issues and the landlord, with ideally trying to agree that commercial solution and so that the break conditions then don't apply and we can kind of agree outside of those conditions. The Alder King are also being deployed. They're helping us with the schedule of conditions of the property. So that's looking at the supporting us with negotiations around dilapidations costs for the buildings that as per the lease conditions. They visited the site now a few times and they're currently liaising with the landlord surveyors. We've also had meetings with facilities management colleagues, which kind of really relate to both helping and supporting us with exiting or vacating the site, but also looking at how we can continue if SCIL operations continue with an arrangement to lease some of the separate lease for some of the building, how that can continue to work and if they need any support through doing that for those future arrangements. So it picks up both parts of that. Thank you. Kind of more operational issues that we're sort of dealing with is, for those of you that visited Dillington, there's an awful lot of rooms and an awful lot of equipment assets not on site. So I've been reviewing the inventory, and in particular, our focus has taken place on the artwork that exists on site. Some of that has been purchased over the years by Somerset County Council, but some of it is on loan from a variety of kind of grantors that have either kind of part gifted in some arrangement or have loaned those items to us to be kind of held on site and displayed on site. So we've been making sure all those artworks can be found and are contacting the various individuals about arrangements for returning those artworks at the end of November or in between, certainly October and November time. We've also had discussions with our heritage colleagues around trying to pull together a Dinnington collection for the archive, so something that can be used to look back on the time that Somerset County Council had at Dinnington. So that will contain things like kind of photos of specific events, kind of our past adult education course programs, things like that. So it'll be kind of trying to pull that together, things that help people to remember events and specific things that happened at Dinnington over the many years that we've been on site. We've been also working on some of the website pages, just so that those mainly customers, but also kind of key stakeholders, kind of know what's happening, and trying to signpost those to those kind of customers in particular to alternatives as we go forward. And we've updated a business continuity plan as well, just in it's mainly along the lines that I mentioned earlier around the kind of staffing, casual staff, fixed term contracts, and so on. Thank you. In terms of our adult education offering, so we've already done a bit more work than on some of the other areas, such as kind of the conferences and weddings, just around trying to find those alternative provision for community across Somerset. So there are reasonable kind of, I wouldn't say extensive, but there are reasonable kind of offerings around day courses for kind of community education across Somerset. Across some of our schools and colleges, but less so on residential courses. So we have kind of been linking in with a number of those providers. I've just kind of put a few down there, couple that are in Somerset and one that's just outside Somerset, and having conversations with them around that kind of transition, whether they're interested in taking on any of our courses, signposting our kind of tutors as well to those providers, just to try and kind of ensure that kind of continuity really of offering, and making sure that the customers that have enjoyed attending courses at Dinnington for many years, supporting them in finding alternatives really. The website as well are being updated with a number of links to various providers and what kind of things are out there, trying to make it as easy as possible to try and find alternatives rather than them having to go and look for them themselves. Next slide, please. Thank you. So I mentioned skill earlier. So a number of options have been explored for skills relocation, but nothing has currently been available that's suitable meets their needs. That work is going to continue by property colleagues, but and they're more hopeful of finding alternative accommodation post of unitary council post April 23. So that work's going to continue. In the meantime, discussions are taking place with the landlord that had currently kind of taken place maybe sort of 5-6 months ago, just to kind of put out some feelers around this. And he's relatively positive about them continuing to use just a number of rooms and part of the site whilst he kind of develops and thinks what to do with the rest of it. So those discussions are continuing, and it's likely that arrangement will be for possibly for one further year and an option to extend for a further 12 months after that. Next slide, please. Thank you. On our financials, so it's two slides on the financials. The first one picks up the current revenue operating budget. So as we're all aware, that the continuing cost pressures, certainly around staff and pay, but as well as energy and consumables, there's quite big energy bills at Dinnington House, but also the cost of food and drink has also gone up considerably. So that is all having a big pressure on the budget. However, I'd say the projections for 22-23 have been around that level there that I've put down of 550 to 600 overspend for most of the year. So it's kind of fluctuated around that. But just to give you an idea, it's gone up. We knew that those kind of figures were kind of coming to some extent. We'd forecast them early on and projected that kind of figure, and it's remained relatively kind of stable around that level, probably drifting up by about sort of 20 or so thousand over the last kind of 6 months. But again, you can see the kind of pressure and why that sort of those sort of figures were made clear in when the decision was made back in September. Also looking forward to 23-24, we've been working on that kind of budget going forward, and an overspend of around 170 for that 6 month period has been forecast, which again is in line with previous kind of figures that were reported. Next slide, please. So the next kind of area on the financials relates to the close down costs. So these are being monitored and reported through kind of every month. So these are operational costs that are going to be specifically relating with our exit of Dillington, exit of the lease. There is going to be some minor operational costs in the scheme of things around October, November as part of vacating premises, which we're also bringing in and making sure that we track and monitor. Overall, on that kind of area of costings and financials, as opposed to the operational ones I've just talked about, we're currently kind of on track around the figure that was reported back in September, which is a forecast of 3.1 million. The main two areas of cost, though, there I would highlight are writing off the Hyde loan and the dilapidations kind of costs as well, which I kind of mentioned earlier, and they're still to be determined. There's likely to be more, I suppose, risk and flexibility variance around the dilapidations than the Hyde loan, but need to make you aware that those are the two kind of main kind of costs in there that are still not to be finalised as yet. Next slide, please. Just in terms of project management, just so you are aware. So as the current head of service leading on this project, I'm leaving the end of this month. So we are been talking, myself and Mickey Green, been talking around new arrangements for that kind of moving forward, but also recognising that Mickey, as the current senior reporting officer, also got a new role moving forward from April. So we've just been working out kind of how that kind of where that fits going forward in the council in terms of structures, and making sure that we have a planned kind of handover to the next person that will kind of lead this for the following kind of 6-7 months and through to exiting the lease. But just to reassure you that we've got lots of plans and documentation that were passed on to the next person, so making that kind of handover as managed as possible. So the final few slides, this one just picks up around kind of the summaries, summarizes the risks really. So the main ones are around kind of staffing in particular, both in terms of staff at Dillington, motivating them, getting the kind of performance right during a really tricky and challenging time for those individuals. And just on that, just want to say how amazing and professional they've all been actually through what's been a really challenging period. But they've continued to, get on with their work to absolute professional standards. All the people that visit Dillington, that we've had such kind of positive comments recently. So just really want to highlight that. Again, in terms of any staff that do decide to leave over that kind of period, there's a risk around our ability to recruit into those posts, but hopefully we'll be able to either do so through those fixed term contracts, or as the time goes on, probably using agency staff or covering from others internally. The other risk that we want to highlight is around that ability to secure the future accommodation for skill at Dillington and at a reasonable cost. Then similarly around that ability to secure a financial settlement with the landlord and those dilapidations and the value of the Hyde, so wrapping that up, that commercial settlement that I mentioned earlier on, and the kind of making sure we've got robust project arrangements and capacity in place to see this through until the end of November. Next slide. I think this is the final one in terms of some of the priorities over the coming few months. So the first one has actually since been actioned. So the issuing the formal notice of the lease has now taken place. So that has been issued. And just to say that since that has been issued, there's been more positive discussions with the landlord, who was kind of less willing to engage, let's say, with some of the property colleagues until that notice had been issued by ourselves. So that's been really positive. The negotiation, which I mentioned, and that again, that issuing of the lease is helping with that, and there's more positive discussions now taking place, both around that commercial settlement, but also again around the arrangements for skill. So that's now sort of moving forward a bit better. Continuing around the inventory and those kind of plans for disposal of the assets and where they kind of go to, and making sure that we get kind of maximizing the value for those moving forward. Those communications with both customers, particularly of adult education courses, but also of conferences and weddings and so on, but particularly in that area, and how we can kind of support them and tutors around that future provision. Operational delivery until the end of September is absolutely key, making sure that those that visit Dillington up until that point in time continue to get the same level of high quality and experience that they would expect if they'd have come before this decision had been made a year or so ago. And then new arrangements and finalising those for project management and governance of that moving forward. And I think that is the last slide. Any okay. questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillor Pryor Sankey, please.
Thank you. I can recall sitting here when we scrutinised this in the beginning and being absolutely assured, I think it was Francis Nicholson, but I might be wrong, that there were masses of places out there that could accommodate skill. How wrong we were. So it's very disappointing that we haven't managed to find a base for skill. I'm not quite sure how skill operates in terms of finances, who bears the financial risk and so on. But it just seems to me that we are in danger of, I don't know, losing that, or at least having to pay a vast amount for her, because we're not going to have a choice. And that was not how the picture was painted to us. So I'd be interested to know, you know, what the financial implications of that might be. You might not be able to tell me, I don't know. But I'm really kind of disappointed that we were kind of led down the garden path, I think, on the future of skill. And my daughter is there, she's due to finish this year, but you know, it is such a valuable resource for learning here in Somerset, for children's, for social, all sorts of things happen with skill, and to lose that resource is going to be horrendous. And I can also, could you remind me what the write-off for the Hyde building is? I can't quite remember the figure, but I don't know, I just think we should probably have set down, gone along the route of trying to not be in this position, particularly with the Hyde building, because well, for the school facilities, I don't know if that's all of Hyde or part of it, but it just seems that we've kind of backed ourselves really into a corner here, and it's disappointing and worrying. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, just really to pick out the skill comments there, and I really do appreciate what Hazel was saying there. So just in terms of reassurance, I suppose, around the skill activities continuing, and it's really valued kind of service. There's certainly no question about that service stopping. The main thing is, as you quite rightly picked out, is that the cost of that continuing kind of arrangements with the landlord at Dillington for that kind of interim period until a new appropriate location is found. So certainly initial conversations with that the landlord had made it kind of clear what kind of amounts that he was expecting for that. We're hoping that will continue, which won't be too dissimilar from what Skill are already paying. But obviously there's still negotiations to take place that. And I think, we would be more than happy to come back and give you an update on that at some point in time when some of those key figures start to get kind of crystallized a bit more. That being one of them, the dilapidations and then the Hyde loan in particular, I guess. Those three would probably be useful coming back to you on.
OK, thank you. Dawn Johnson, please.
Hi, thank you for the update. My question is sort of similar to Hazel's, really, is, you know, where are we now? And you're saying that the costs in one of your slides are pretty much, you know, as you were expecting. But I'm concerned about these extra costs that possibly could be arising from skill remaining at the premises. And also the dilapidation costs. You know, can you comment on, you know, are they looking like you were expecting? Are they way off, or are we, you know, what's I mean, there's so many unknowns still that haven't been, you know, pinned down. But I am concerned about the potential for the costs of pulling out of Dillington actually escalating.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so just to pick out in particular, I think there, the dilapidations costs. So the surveyor that has been on site a number of times now to look at the condition surveys, he's certainly indicating that we should not be miles away from the figures that we kind of initially expected in terms of dilapidation costs, which obviously the landlord surveyors are going to be kind of trying to push it in the other direction. So there will be negotiation around there. But I think his initial kind of viewpoint is that what we've been kind of estimating is as good a figure and that which what we should continue to kind of base those estimates on going forward.
I mean, I think, of course, the real reason for disposing of the lease was because of the ongoing losses of running the place. If you can remind me, I mean, looking at the figures, we seem to be looking at an operational loss for the last six months we're there of 170. And yet I think we were persuaded to extend the period of occupation in order to honour commitments from next summer.
That's right.
And I'm beginning to wonder, I mean, I can't remember, and I mean, you'll be able to tell me, as to whether we were aware that it was nevertheless extending it would still cost us 170. Wouldn't it have been perhaps cheaper just to pull the plug at the end of March and bite the bullet much quicker?
Yeah, no, we did make everybody aware of that there's likely to be that level of cost going forward. The issues were that there was likely to be, if we pulled out earlier, that there would be offsetting costs that we would incur from both cancelling kind of those, particularly a number of the weddings that were in place, and kind of probably offering some compensation back to those couples for cancelling their weddings at what would be quite short notice, and they wouldn't then probably be able to find another venue. So it was managing those kind of relationships and incurring some other costs. It did mean that there would be some cost to continuing, but that was kind of relatively low, I think around the figure of maybe 30,000 or 40,000 or so after offsetting those. And it was almost that then that kind of cost to continue operating and have those kind of avoid some of those reputational issues.
Thank you. And do we have any news on who will be leading the project after the 1st of April? Is Mickey Green going to keep an overview, or is somebody else being drafted in?
The default at the moment is that Mickey will continue to hold it unless it moves to somebody kind of more appropriate from April kind of onwards. So if that isn't possible, Mickey will continue to hold those reins moving forward.
OK, I mean, certainly for a project like this, continuity is very, very important.
Exactly.
OK,
yeah.
I haven't got any other hands waving at me. So, Ian, thank you very much for the update. And I think we need to put this on a list for a future committee to come back to probably later in the year, just to see, particularly as we get towards the end of the wedding season, to make sure that things are on track. Dawn is quite right to highlight the severe uncertainty, which is hopefully not as severe as I fear it might be, in relation to the Hyde loan and the dilapidations. But inevitably, they will be subject to negotiation, and we'll just have to see how we go. But thank you very much, Ian.
Super. No, thank you, everybody.
Right. Apologies for the late running of this particular service. We've had...
at least you turned up.
Yes, at least it's here. Right, we're on to the last item on the agenda, and I'm going to have to move a motion to exclude the press and public. So I'd like the committee to consider passing a resolution under Schedule 12A of the Local Government Act 1972 that the press and public be excluded during the remaining of the meeting on the basis that if they were present during the business to be transacted, there will be a likelihood of disclosure to them of exempt information of the following description: information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the authority holding that information. Can I have a proposer, please? And a seconder, Theo and Dawn. Thank you very much. Right, can we go into closed session? Are we going to vote? Can we vote on that, please? Put it to the vote. Right, all in favour? No.
And against.
Right. Well, we will try and give this the appropriate amount of time, but no longer. Are we signed off in public now?